Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the special Monday night broadcast. We're usually here every Sunday evening talking the game of baseball, talking the game of fantasy baseball, talking whatever the heck we want to talk about. And our good friend, the great Tim McLeod, had a commitment yesterday. So we gave him the night off and decided, what the heck, let's just do this on a Monday night. And that's why we're here. If you want to get a hold of us, the best way to do that is actually a couple of different ways. You can go out to Twitter and find me at RichWilsonP361, at RichWilsonP361. You get the great Tim McLeod at TimothyLMC, at TimothyLMC. You can also go out to the P361, the bullpen. It's run by Alan Servinus, who called in last week. I just got a chance to hear Alan talking about trading in one of the dynasty leagues and how he goes about it and approaches that. I thought some very good insight along the way. And of course, you can get the great Tim McLeod out on Facebook, Tim McLeod. Don't contact me. I never go out to Facebook. So I just don't. I know the whole world goes out to Facebook. I hang out on Twitter, and I might be the only person, myself and Donald Trump, who are out on Twitter, but I like the media. I get a chance and, 140 characters to answer questions and so forth. And I do my best, try to answer them all. Don't get to all of them. Sometimes some of them require research, and I just don't have time to do the research. Tomorrow, if you're out in Visalia, California, which is where the California All-Star Game, Cali League All-Star Game will be there, feel free to join me. I'm behind home plate somewhere. Just checked the weather forecast, and it's 110 degrees tomorrow. So I didn't think it was that hot in Visalia. I've never been there before. Flying into Fresno, 45-minute car ride down to Visalia, and then spending the night in beautiful Bakersville, California, before I move on down to Los Angeles on Wednesday. But it does remind me that this past week was the MLB draft. And it's fun just to see the kids getting selected. And it was an interesting draft in that there were really top five players and then everybody else. It was Royce Lewis, Hunter Green, Mackenzie Gore, Brendan McKay, and I'm missing somebody, the guy that went to the Braves that escapes me at the moment, the pitcher from Vanderbilt. Ah, anyway, I should have the names in front of me, but I don't. And then it was everybody else. I wrote up how I thought about some of those top 15 or so players. Put that on Prospect 50, 361. So if you're interested, go take a look at that. But I was reminded these kids, particularly the high school kids, when they're so young, and this is like winning the lottery for them. I mean, this is for most of them, maybe not these top five, but if you take a look at the guys in the first round, particularly the guys round 2 through 40, this is the biggest payday of their lives. And I go back to Royce Lewis, who has already signed. It's funny, the Minnesota Twins, who I uniformly pan on most things, and I did this, I think they should have taken Hunter Green, though I think Royce Lewis is going to be a fine prospect. He's very athletic. Will probably move out to center field eventually. He's a little bit of a Byron Buxton. The tools aren't quite as loud. Can already hit a little bit better than when Byron Buxton came out of Georgia, high school in Georgia. So, but Royce Lewis signed for $6.725 million, represented by Scott Barr. So there was no discount. Slot was 7.77, so maybe got a bit of a discount, but it wasn't like the Twins did a Carlos Correa and said, hey, sign for $4 million on a $6 million slot. This was, a significant sign, and Barr is going to get the most for his client. But if we take a look at what does that $6.725 million mean, a lot of people say, well, the kid's set for life. First of all, federal taxes take out 39.6% of his paycheck. California takes another 13.3%. You got Obamacare taking another 2.5%. That's a total of 55.5% of that money gone off the top. Now, for you, the accountants that listen to it, yes, I know it's graduated because the first dollar is not taxed at 39.6 and 13.3. So let's just say that in general, that 55.4 turns into 53%. That means he's going to get $3.16 million after tax. Now, he's got to get the Boris Corporation probably 5% of that. Of that 6.725 says another $350,000. He's probably going to buy a car, a pickup truck, something like that. It's not going to be a little cheap one. He's going to get an expensive one. He'll probably pay off his parents' mortgage. Kids do that a lot. So think that's going to be probably another $300,000 just in stuff that he's going to buy with his newfound money. So also now in his bank account, he's got $2.5 million. Now, the great thing about going these kids who sign with these big time agents, the Boris Corporation is going to help him manage his money. They're going to put him together with a financial planner. But let's say after tax, he can earn 2 to 3% of that money. And let's throw in inflation and so forth. So if it's 2 to 3% of that money, that $2.5 million then turns into, let's call it an annuity. It's not going to be an annuity of $77,000 a year for the rest of his life. A great backstop. Don't get me wrong. I would love to have $77,000 running to me, you know, for the rest of my life on an annual basis, but not what you would call set for life. He'll have to, if it doesn't make it in baseball, he's going to have to work. He'll probably be a coach somewhere, maybe a school teacher, maybe go to college, take some of that money, go to college, etc. But also that big money, eventually he'll want to buy a house and get married, and some of that money will come off the top. So while it's huge sums of money, this is not, he'll never have to work again if he doesn't make it in baseball. This is why it's the biggest paydays of these guys' lives, but why it's so important that they hook up with really good agents to kind of help them through this process, because they're going to need it. And I've seen too many kids, and you've read about them. You hear about this a lot in basketball, where kids just blow all their money. I think it was the Boston Celtics forward. I can't remember his name in the day. He was paid $100 million and lost it all. And he hear it too much. So for all of you young guys that just got signed, particularly those that got signed in the fourth, fifth, sixth round, and you got $800,000 signing bonus, don't blow it all. Invest it, save it, because the chance of you making it big in the show is just remote. It just is. And that's kind of my, as a 54-year-old man who's closer to retirement than starting my career, is why it's important to think all this stuff ahead. And you watch, out of those, let's see, 40 rounds, 30 players, 1,200 plus players that got drafted, you won't hear about over 1,100 of them. You'll never, ever hear their names. That's remarkable. Let's bring on the great Tim McLeod. Timmy, how are you, my friend? Happy Monday.
Yes, happy Monday to you, Rich. I hope you had a great Father's Day.
I did indeed, Timmy. My daughter got me these little tiny cupcakes, and I'm on this whole 30 diet, and I've got two more days left on it. Timmy, I feel great. She said, why don't you make it whole 29 and take the day off and have some cupcakes? So I had some cupcakes, Timmy, so I have to extend it an extra day.
Well, you know what? It sounds like a really reasonable extension, Rich. And Kathy definitely wanted me to pass on her thanks for altering the show nights. It was a really great day, and she really appreciated it. As a matter of fact, Rich, she appreciated it so much, okay? Our fantasy problems are now over, okay? We are going to rock. We are going to win the rest of the year, and I'll tell you why. Just for you and me, okay, tonight around supper time, to appease the fantasy gods, she made a burnt offering on our behalf.
Oh, really? What did she burn?
You didn't hear that, did you?
That's funny, Tim.
She called me an asshole, Rich.
Oh. Wow, Tim. He went from, what was the burnt offering? That's so funny. That's very, very, burnt offering. Timmy, very well played.
Well, yeah, it's going to cost me down the road.
Yeah,
big time, right?
Welcome to the couch. So I hope the couch is very comfortable tonight.
Well, yeah, we've been there before, so you know, we'll live it again. But no, it was a fun weekend. It really was, and our thanks and appreciation.
Well, I've got to ask for your indulgence because next Sunday night, believe it or not, Timmy, on Sunday night, I'm going to my niece's wedding. So she's getting married in beautiful Frederick, Maryland. I think she's 27.
Hmm.
So the wedding's on a Sunday night. What's up with that? But anyway, so
usually Friday, Saturday, that sort of thing.
Maybe they got a deal on the venue. I don't know. So, but I can't do it Sunday, Timmy, because I think it's wrong to sneak out of my. I only have one niece. It's one niece on my family side. Lori, I have nieces on the other side. Lori's family. I don't think I can. I don't think I can sneak out.
No, and that stunt with your phone, okay, that you pulled off a couple of weeks ago, that ain't gonna work at a wedding.
No,
it's not.
So we'll be doing a special Monday night part two next week as well. So, Timmy, how are your teams?
There's a reason that bird offering was offered. things are okay. I'm dealing with injury after injury, like so many other people. But hey, things are starting to turn a bit of a corner. I'm seeing a little bit of daylight in some of them. Some are lost causes, but hey, you just plug away, do the best you can, and hopefully some of the disaster that's befallen me in the first half disappears in the second.
Yeah, well, I mean, you had to like what Trey Turner did yesterday. I know you own him in Tout Wars. Four stolen bases, Tim. One hit, one walk, four stolen bases. That's darn impressive.
Well, you know, if he continues at the pace he's continuing at, he's first-round material, isn't he?
He just passed Billy Hamilton for the number of stolen bases, so the lead the league in stolen bases, which is pretty impressive because it looked like Billy Hamilton was going to steal 90 bases. He slowed down because of injuries, but Trey Turner is picking up, Tim, because remember, he was injured for a while and then, a little slow coming back and has a little pop. I mean, it could be 12 to 15 home runs when it's all said and done and 60, 70 stolen bases. I think that's first-round material.
Yeah, as do I. My problem in Tout hasn't been Trey Turner. It hasn't been my offense for the most part. My problem there is
pitching.
And when you lose a Noah Syndergaard and you lose Rodon and Blake Snell gets demoted, it doesn't take very long for you to really, really suffer in the pitching categories. And that's been my Achilles heel.
Yeah, and Noah Syndergaard, clearly, Timmy, the news was not good for you and a lot of other guys who took Syndergaard in the back of the first round or the second round at the latest. He has a setback, his oblique recovery is now out at least until mid-August, I'm hearing. And, I don't know what's going on with the Mets, but it's just bad news all around.
Well, yeah, you're looking at probably 6-7 starts out of Syndergaard, and realistically, how hard are the Mets going to push him, knowing the odds are pretty good that they aren't going to be playing for anything at that time of the year? So, basically, Syndergaard is a wasted pick for the most part.
Yeah, and who would have thought, Timmy? I mean, there's always a chance that guys get injured. But an oblique injury usually is a 6-week thing. They come back and you're good as gold. And
right.
Now he's going to miss, 2/3 of the season with it?
Well, yeah, a good 2/3 of the season. What's he going to end up getting in? Maybe 12 starts?
Yeah. And the last 6 starts, you don't care because you'll be so far out of it, or people who own will be so far. It doesn't matter. I mean, you missed the time that you needed. Because if you lose a guy late, maybe it's just psychology. If you lose a guy late, you just try to find a way to hang on. But if you lose them early, you just dig a hole and you're putting in guys that are, you're putting in Joe Musgrove for Noah Syndergaard, and you're so far back in your ratios. You haven't won any games and you're done.
Well, yeah, right now I'm looking at 1 point in strikeouts, 1 point in whip, and 1 point in wins. It's pretty well consistent across the board. And, you know, the fact that I've moved up into 12th spot or so, and I've got some ground to gain yet, but right now my aces are Montgomery of the Yankees and Feria of the Rays. Okay. I can't say any more than that.
It's amazing. Let's talk a little bit more about the Mets, because not only did we get bad news on Noah Syndergaard, but Matt Harvey, stress fracture to his elbows. He's going to be gone for a while as well. And I got to tell you, Timmy, we always are pointing to 2018. I mean, Matt Harvey, I don't want to over-dramatize it, but he is a shell of himself.
Well, yeah. I can't see him going as in the top 50 starting pitchers next year, unless somebody really is tossing darts. And I know one person that won't be in that direction. That's me.
I would toss a dart on pitcher number 51. I would definitely do that. If my fifth pitcher, let's say, well, it's not even going to be a fifth pitcher. So, yeah, I probably wouldn't at 50, but fifth pitcher off the board, I would definitely take a gamble on him, but not anything earlier than that.
Well, no, definitely not. And again, he's looking at, well, is he going to be back with the Mets next year?
Well, I don't think he's a free agent yet. I'm not looking at the data, but I don't think he's a free agent yet. But, you know, they can't get rid of him. I guess somebody would pick him up, but, I mean, he'd be 20% of his value. I mean, they can't get rid of him.
Well, you know, when you look at everything else that's happened this year, the suspension for not making it to the ballpark on time, at some point in time, you would think that they might just make that move just to divulge himself of having to put up with him moving forward.
Yeah, this is the Mets, Timmy. So here's the rotation. Jacob DeGrom looked fantastic. I am so glad, no offense, Timmy, that I didn't listen to you and I started up two starts, because he was brilliant this week. And going up against, I know one was the Cubs, who are a shell of themselves. I'll talk about them another day. And another really good team, it escapes me who else he pitched against, and looked
Cubs
great.
And Nats, I think.
Who was it?
Cubs and Nats, I think.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Cubs and Nats. And won two games, didn't give up a run. It was great. One was a shutout. I think he pitched 16 innings or something like that. It was fantastic. So they got the Grom. Mats looks okay. Wheeler, you know, I mean, Timmy's almost at a, you know, he's only going to go 120 innings. Lugo, I mean, and he's got a torn ulnar collateral ligament. Gesellman, one day looks okay, the next day looks terrible. I mean, is that good enough to sneak into a wild card? Because they're not going to catch the Nats.
No, I don't think it's good enough to sneak into a wild card berth. I favor the Braves a bit more. I think the Braves have got a better chance than the Mets. But tell me, how does a pitcher, okay, allow 7 and 8 earned runs respectively in two starts, then go out and pitch 9 innings with 1 earned run and an 8-inning 3-hit shutout in his next two games? How does that happen, Rich?
Well, I mean, I didn't read any news reports of how that happened, but he's a guy, and this has happened to him before. His mechanics just get out of whack, and he works on that on side sessions, and, you know, usually he's out of alignment to home plate, and he's got his elbow flying out, and he's walking a ton of guys, and, you know, all of a sudden he gets his mechanics back together, and he's got elite stuff and good control when he has it, and it you know, we've seen this before. Go back and look every year. He will get out of sync like this. The problem is he destroys you, because you're using your pitch throwing him out there, and he'll destroy you for a couple, 3 outings.
Well, yeah, you know, the one thing that still concerns me is, even in those two starts last week, in the first one against the Cubs, he allowed 4 walks.
Yep.
Now, he got it down to 2 in the second start. The one game that he got blown up in, he allowed 5 walks.
Yep.
You take a look at his numbers over the past 7-8 starts. He's walking a lot of people. So he got those two good starts, but somewhere in the back of my mind, it says at some point in time, until he figures out what's wrong and gets those walks down a bit, there might be another ugly start or two sitting there for you.
Yeah, I mean, I was encouraged by the Nats got a way better offense than the Cubs. I mean, the Cubs, Timmy, start your guys against the Cubs. I mean, it is not a good lineup.
Well, no, it's not. You know, you have to sort of chuckle, okay? You look at Chris Bryant, okay? Mm-hmm. And Chris Bryant is having a good year, okay? He's got 15 home runs. How many RBIs does Chris Bryant have, Rich?
I don't know, but I'm guessing not very many based on, I'm going to say 42.
28.
Really? Oh, my word.
He has 28 RBIs. Doesn't that speak volumes as to the number one and number two slots in that batting order?
Well, he's sometimes bats number two. So, and they got Anthony Rizzo batting number one, which, okay, great for daily fantasy baseball. I'm not sure it's great for season long baseball where I'm not going to get the RBIs if I'm an Anthony Rizzo owner.
Well, no, it's, there's a bit of a mess happening there. They've got to shore up the top end of that order, and they got to do it fairly quickly because, how does a guy like Bryant have 28 RBIs on 15 home runs? That's insane.
Yeah, I mean, that Dexter Fowler, loss of Dexter Fowler is looming really, really large for the Cubs. And they, Kyle Schwarber is still batting 170-something, maybe 180 at this juncture. And it's – Timmy, we're getting close to the halfway point. I mean, at what point is it just not happening? Ian Happ has, again, got some power, but, you know, I don't know. His batting average last I looked is not great. And, again, these guys still have pretty decent on-base percentage, but when you're batting 175, yeah, I mean, you have a 290, 300 on-base percentage. That's still not very good.
Well, no, Schwarber's OBP is 294. Russell's 295. Baez, 278. Man, there's a lot of miss in that swing and miss game right now, and they got to get some people on base. They got to get somebody at the top of the order who can get on base and get on base consistently so that they can take advantage of Rizzo and Bryant. Like, hey, I get the fact that Rizzo's getting on base, but man, they need him in the cleanup spot. They don't need him in the leadoff spot.
Let me take us off into a crazy land here for a moment, Timmy, because I didn't put this in the notes.
Sure.
I didn't put any of the stuff in the notes that we're actually talking about. We will go back to the Mets because they are in the notes. I was like listening to MLB Network, and they were talking about the Astros and who the Astros would pick up for. They need another starting pitcher, as does everybody.
Yep.
What starting pitcher would you take, Tim? I mean, are they any good? I mean, Quintana, can we trust him? Garrett Cole, can you trust him? Sonny Gray, can you trust him? I mean, nobody's having like these. Jason Vargas is having a breakout year. Nobody else is. Is he the guy you pick up?
If the price is right, I guess so. But I'm not a huge believer long term. I think what the Astros should do is look to Quintana. He pitched great in his last game against the Jays in Toronto. He's got the history and he's got the contract that they can have him for a couple more years. So if I'm going to chase a pitcher and give up some good talent to get, because hey, let's face it, with the shortage of pitching, if you want somebody who's got decent skills, you're going to pay for it. So they might as well pay for it and take the contract over the next few years. And I think Quintana will be fine long term.
So he's the guy you would go after. You know, if and the Rangers would never do this, but if the Rangers decide they're out of it, Yu Darvish might become the number one pitcher to pick up by these teams, and maybe they go
mm-hmm.
after him. Maybe the Nationals go after, not that they need more pitching, but every team needs pitching. And he feels like he's the only guy in my mind, just again, thinking off the top of my head, that I would put it all down. Even if he's a true rental player, I know what I'm going to get there. I just don't know what I'm getting with these other guys.
Well, yeah, and the problem with Texas is right now they're at 500. They're not going to catch Houston. But when you look at what's happening in the AL, Texas is as much in the hunt as anybody for a wild card spot right now. You know, Minnesota's 34-33. Even the Royals are 33-35 and 35. you know, you look at the AL East, there's, you know, there's five teams within 5.5 games. Texas isn't out of it. So unless Texas really falls off, they could actually be looking at buying a starting pitcher, because if they could get one, you know, you look at Darvish, you look at Hamels, if they can throw a third decent starter in there, all of a sudden, you know, Texas is in pretty good shape.
So Darvish then is probably off the market. I just think that the pitching depth of guys that you're going to give up, a Gleyber Torres, who, by the way, Timmy, is out for the rest of the season, torn UCL in his non-throwing elbow, much like Roman Quinn. Real shame, and he did it on the slide. But you're not gonna give up that level of prospect for most any of these guys. I can't believe that the Houston Astros would give up Tucker or Fisher for Quintana, given what he's done this year. It's just too much risk. Or even Garrett Cole, who, like an all-star, who finally had a good outing, but he had 4 or 5 really bad outings before then.
Well, I think it's whether or not they want to pay the ransom. And let's face it, the White Sox don't have to move Quintana. There's no urgency there whatsoever. So they're sitting back and they're saying, okay, fine, we can help you out. We can bring you to the promised land. This is the guy you want him, you pay for him. It's as simple as that. And if you don't, well, you go into the playoffs with your rotation being what it is, and good luck to you. And I think the White Sox will sit back until they get exactly what they want, because they're in a serious situation of leverage right now.
Yeah, I agree. Sorry, guys. I just realized I forgot to bring up the chat room. My bad. So, Timmy, let's go back to the Mets, because we got stuck on the rotation, which is good, not great. Their positional players, Adrubal Cabrera, is still on the DL, though he might come off soon. Their second baseman just went on the DL. Cespedes seems like he is hurt every other day with something. I think the Mets are done.
I agree. Totally.
So that brings up, should they start trying to move Granderson, Bruce, Duda, anybody else that they can, you know, Walker comes back healthy, maybe him. I mean, are they trying to move any and everybody they can?
I think they should be. I think Granderson should be a target. Jay Bruce has some decent value. He's having a good year with the bat, as he always does. Jay Bruce gets so little respect, and every year you're looking at a guy who's going to be 30-90 or so with a .250 batting average, steal a few bases. I'd definitely be looking at moving Jay Bruce and getting the most I could for him right now.
Yeah, I agree. I think Justin Bourne just hit another home run, Timmy. I think I sold him to the good doctor, Mershak, for Jeremy Jeffries. That was a bad trade.
Yeah, you win some, you lose some. Who would have
thought? Yeah, I lost that.
Find a way.
Yeah, that's when Jeremy Jeffries actually had the closer job, and I cut him.
Right.
And just gave Justin Bour away. But he just yoked a ball out, just really quick bat, not a long swing at all. He's put on a little weight, too. I haven't seen him play this year.
Yeah, I think he was out for a bit, hurt. But he's finally starting to hit both righties and lefties. And, you know, the jury was out heading into this year. Miami wanted to give him a good shot at owning a full-time job rather than the platoon situation. And he's taken and ran with it. But, you know, in your defense on this one, he could be the player we saw last year and amass 250 to 300 at-bats every year for the rest of his career. You know, who knew?
I guess wrong, and I gave him away. Not good. Timmy, all this, not to bury the lead, going back to the Mets, this all gets down to Ahmed Rosario, who, now that Gleyber Torres is out, it's probably he and Yoan Moncada are the two best near-ready prospects in the minor leagues that can come up and help their team and help fantasy owners. What's the motivation for the Mets calling him up? I mean, everybody's hurt, and they still didn't call him up because Sandy Alderson said he needs more grooming. Again, he's not walking a ton. Everybody needs grooming. You could say that about any and every player needs additional grooming. Maybe Mike Trout and Bryce Harper don't need additional cream, but basically everybody else could learn a thing or two. So,
but
I just don't.
If you saw my beard, Rich, you'd say I need more grooming.
That's true. Why? What's the motivation for the Mets bringing him up? They're out of it. They're going to start moving players. Why start burning up service time? He's only 21 years old. He doesn't turn 22 until November. I'm worried that Amad Rosario might not see the major leagues at all.
Yeah, I think it's a legitimate concern this year. Yeah, you know, he could go into spring training next year, win the job, and they sit him for, 2 weeks or whatever, and bring him up at that point in time. But I think it's a legitimate concern. I think Rosario is definitely ready right now. How he performs, I don't know, but he's done everything to earn an opportunity. But the business of baseball is such that there is a good chance that we don't see him this year.
Yeah. When we get back, Timmy, we're going to play the What the F game.
Ooh, I like that one.
Now, I did write these eight What the F things, Timmy, and it was yesterday, before yesterday's game, so I could be off a little bit here, but I didn't have time today. In fact, I was driving home from work today going, what am I going to do this evening? My mind's wandering, all the little things I have to do. And I suddenly looked down and I go, oh, my gosh, I have a podcast to do. So.
You mean you don't use those sticky notes on your dash like I do, Rich?
I should, Timmy, but I mean, it's weird when you do something every week at the same time, roughly, yeah, and then all of a sudden it's on a different day. It's like, what? Anyway, Timmy, here's the first What the F. Aaron Judge has 23 home runs. You just comment, give me your thoughts on it. I mean, could he hit 50? Could he hit 60? I mean, is he going to slow down? I mean, it's crazy what he's doing.
Well, yeah, it is, and you know we've still got almost two full weeks left in June. So you know, assuming he hits, we'll say the number 26 by the end of June, that leaves him averaging 8 a month over the next 3 months to get to 50. Yeah, it is possible, but I'm going to take the under on that one. I think at some point in time he's going to slow down a little bit, and he'll have a month, July, August, September, where he hits 3 or 4. And that'll leave him a little bit shy, but it's an amazing year. And if he does manage to break the 50 mark, does that then make him potentially a top 5 pick next spring?
He will not be on my team. There is no way that I'm going to draft somebody with now it's only a 30% strikeout rate. I'm not going to put a guy with a 30% strikeout rate and a 431 BABIP as my first round draft pick. It's the same reason that Giancarlo Stanton, I don't think, has ever been a first-round draft pick, except maybe in a dynasty league. It's just, it doesn't make sense. Something just doesn't add up.
Well, you know, I said the same thing to some extent after Mike Trout's rookie season. Now, I'm not saying Aaron Judge, okay, is Mike Trout. Definitely, I'm not saying that. But if he does hit 50, once a player hits a certain number, once they produce at that level, don't they then sort of own that to some extent, Rich?
That's the base kind of thing. But so if that's true, then he's doing it with batting average of balls in play that's, you know, 120 points higher than it should be. He's not going to, you can't tell me he's going to own a 335 bat. I think there's regression there, and I think there's going to be regression all over the place. I mean, if I'm thinking next year, and let's just say Judge winds up with a 302 batting average, he's got, 53 RBIs, 110 RBIs, 110 runs, and 48 home runs, and 12 stolen bases. He is not going to be on my team. I will be scared to death of Aaron Judge.
Yeah, he won't be on my team either. I was just playing devil's advocate, but I could see him going potentially that high. It'll be very interesting to see what happens over the next 3 months, because the next 3 months are going to totally dictate what happens, I think, next spring. And I think with the power that's available out there, I see Aaron Judge as a 280 batting average type. And I'm not going to pay for 300 plus.
Yeah, I always thought this when he was coming through the minor. I see him as a 250, 260 guy with 30 plus home run power and a little bit of speed that will fade in the next two or three years. I think he's a great player, very, very good player. He is not a first round draft pick to me in a fantasy league, but you know, Timmy, I've been wrong his entire career being Chris Sale. I could be completely wrong with Aaron Judge. I'm just not gonna risk it.
No, I'm not either.
How about this as a first-round draft pick? Matt Davidson, Timmy. Remember Matt Davidson came up with the Boston Red Sox organization? He's got 15 home runs.
Yeah, he does. And you know what? When you look back at his minor league stats, yeah, he had 23 in 2015. And, you know, he does have 15, but five of them are in the past week. And I think Davidson has 25 home run power. Right now he's on an incredible tear. And, hey, he's just on a roll. I started him in a couple of leagues that I normally wouldn't this week just to see if that lightning is going to extend into a second week. But, you know, in 2015, 191 strikeouts. He's got 77 strikeouts in 183 at-bats this year. Like, I think Davidson is Joey Gallo light. How's that sound? But
he might be
right
Joey Gallo. Joey Gallo heavy, 39% strikeout rate, a 5% walk rate. At least Gallo gets on base. I mean, Davidson's doing this with a .348 batting average of balls in play, and only a .257 average. He is a 10-day stretch of batting .220 and not getting any playing time.
Yeah, that's. I don't see the playing time disappearing, but yeah, he could go back very quickly and hit a .150 this week. But what it does is it illustrates that a player with a skill at any point in time can get hot. And when they get hot, if you can take advantage of it, it's gravy. But you also have to be cognizant of the fact that odds are pretty good that it's going to come crashing down.
Here's the biggest what the F, Timmy. This might be the biggest what the F for the entire season if you own this guy. Manny Machado is batting .211.
Yeah, amazing, isn't it?
It is killing people. If you took him in the first round, again, batting average two balls in play, .230. Looks like his average is up .217. Must have had everything else is in line, Timmy. Strikeout rates are a little bit – he's just getting unlucky, and we keep saying that and keep expecting him to correct. And, again, we're getting halfway in the season, and he hasn't corrected yet.
Well, one of the things – I scanned some stats, and I took a look fairly deep at Manny. And as a rule, the worst months that he has had as a major leaguer, okay, he strikes out in the area of 23 to 24 times. That is pretty well – the worst months he's had since becoming a major leaguer. In May this year, he struck out 31 times with only 6 walks. And what that says to me is that in the month of May, Manny Machado decided he was going to be a slugger and he was going to pound the ball to the tune of 15 home runs. And oops, guess what, Manny? That's not your game. Like, those strikeouts are way out of line, and I think they're going to come back down to earth, and the power will be there. But it's just odd that for that 1 month, his strikeouts were that high.
Yeah, everything looks like he's going to correct, and it's going to be a better second half. But, boy, he's been brutal for – and I know I have him on one dynasty league, and it's a good dynasty league, and it's one that can compete. But single-handedly, Timmy, he is killing me. Because I expected 30 home runs and close to 300 batting average, and I got the guy is probably on pace for 30 home runs, but it's coming very expensively with a .211 batting or .217 batting average. It's not good. Here's one, Timmy, that I did not realize. I was just hunting for what the F. Charlie Blackmon has 54 RBIs, which, okay, but it's out of the leadoff position. How is that possible?
Well, it's possible when Mark Reynolds has 40 runs scored, Trevor Story has 30, Walters is in the top three, I believe, in catchers with 27, Desmond has 27 runs scored. I think what you're seeing here is a situation where the bo- bottom end, the back end of the order in Colorado, is getting on base and providing him those opportunities. That's the only reason. And Blackman is tearing it up. He's got 95 hits so far in 290 at bats. So, hey, if the bottom of your lineup is getting on base and you've got a guy who's driving the ball all over the place, hey, it doesn't make sense, but that's the only reason I can see for it occurring.
Okay, Tim, big shot. Who would you rather have? You're on the clock next year in the first round, and you're picking 10. And on the board is Aaron Judge or Charlie Blackman. Who are you taking?
I'm gonna take Aaron Judge. I'm gonna have some fun with it. Blackman isn't running, and that's to me at least a sort of a problem. And I went through it last year in that I drafted Blackman, and I was expecting 25 to 30 home runs, 25 stolen bases, and yeah, he tore it up. He hit for more power, more RBIs, but the stolen bases weren't there. And even though he achieved some really lofty goals and put up some great numbers, without the stolen bases there, I've got to go Judge. I don't think Blackman's ever going to steal more than 15 bases again on a good year.
Timmy, would you like to do a 2018 steak and liquor bet? I got Charlie Blackman. You got Aaron Judge.
Yeah, sure. It'll give me incentive to lose that 10, 15 pounds over the next 6 months, Rich. Yeah. I'll create some space for it with my healthier living. How's that?
That's right. Well, you got a year and a half to one of us has to pay up on that because, I mean, look, even if Charlie Blackman only steals a dozen bases, he's on pace and he did 29 home runs. And this happens a lot as players get older, they cross. But the contact rate's a lot better. I just think he's a better hitter, even though his BABIP is 379. I just think he's a better hitter than Aaron Judge, and I think he returns more value, Tim. You think Aaron Judge does?
Well,
it is on the board.
Okay, done like dinner.
Here's one, Timmy. Now, guy's been going downhill for a while, but this one blew me away because I when I sorted in either Baseball Reference or Fan Graphs, and I went down to the bottom just to see who had the worst on-base percentage. And it's Alcides Escobar. Timmy, he has a 220 on-base percentage. I wrote, how does this guy still have a job?
Well, obviously the Royals are, talking him up right now because he's a free agent next year. Do you realize he has a 475 ops? 475. He has one home run and one stolen base. Like, I don't know how he has a job other than the fact that he's under contract.
It's amazing. Kansas City's playing well, 7-3 in their last 10. It's just remarkable. And he's been brutal. I actually started off the season with him, I think, in two leagues. I was expecting a little stolen base. He's not running, not getting on base. He's just brutal.
Well, yeah, you can't. You're better off. I would roster VR right now on the DL before I'd roster Escobar because I know VR is not going to hurt me for the next week or whatever until he's back.
That was funny. We talked about that last week with some of my pitchers, and I was going to play guys on the DL over some of the other stiffs I had in one league. But, Timmy, coming into the season, there was one team that we were convinced would be a historically bad team. Who was that team, Tim, just to remind our listeners?
Historically bad? Maybe the Giants. I don't think we were real big on them.
No. I think the Padres. I mean, it was a terrible team coming into it, and you just spoiled the surprise. The Giants, Tim, have a worse record than the San Diego Padres. I can't even believe it.
I was trying to do one of those segue things, but I think I blew it, Rich.
Yeah, you blew it, Tim. You should have said the Padres, and I would have said, let's do this all over again. Tim, coming into the season this year, one team was supposed to have the worst historically bad team, who was that?
The Giants. No, I mean the Padres.
Tim, do you realize that the Giants have a worse record? Wouldn't that have been awesome?
I, Unbelievable is all I can say about the Giants. Unbelievable. Like, how do you have, okay, you know, Bumgarner hurt them big time, okay?
Yep.
But when you look at the rest, who right now, Rich, is the ace of the San Francisco Giants staff?
Let's see. Matt Moore has been terrible because I don't own him anywhere, but I thought he'd be pretty good this year, so I've been tracking him all that well. But I know based on Twitter questions that usually followed by foul language about Matt Moore, I know he's no good. Jeff Samardzija, I mean, he's done. I mean, he's a number four pitcher. Ty Black, maybe it's Ty Black. I don't know. I mean, he's – oh, I don't – Timmy, they don't have it. I don't even know who the ace is. Do they have anybody who's better than a number three or number four pitcher?
Well, you nailed them. Congratulations, Rich. It's Ty Black with a 4.23 ERA. Moore is sitting with a 6 ERA.
Yep.
Kane is sitting with a 4.99. Sharkey's at 4.81. And Suedo's at 4.57. Ty Black is your ace in San Francisco.
Wow, I forgot about Johnny Cueto. I almost said Suedo to me. I almost forgot about Johnny Cueto. He's another guy. He's another guy that the Giants are not going anywhere. It's under contract. Another pitcher that you would think teams in a normal year would be trading for, but Tim, to give up a Gleyber Torres-level prospect for him, no.
No, you can. If I'm not mistaken, he's owed a small fortune over the next few years on a pretty good contract. So, you know, the Giants aren't going to eat that contract. They're going to write it off and head into next spring and pretend that this year didn't happen.
I forgot we already, when we started talking about the Cubs earlier, I forgot I actually had this one in there. The Cubs have a team batting average of .236. That ranks 29th in the league, Timmy. The only team worse, the beloved San Diego Padres. The Cubs, Tim, a .236 batting average. I mean, they're the world champs. I mean, they won by far the most number of games last year, and it just has been butt ugly there.
Yeah, but they got the best second baseman in the game in Anthony Rizzo, so that's all that counts, right?
Hey, Timmy, I don't know what you, we haven't talked about that. I haven't watched enough Cub games. All I know is the last I looked, because I do have him in one fantasy league. I'm on the Dynasty League. He's got eight games at second base. I mean, talk about somebody who's going to have tremendous value next year. A second base that you can throw Anthony Rizzo on? Whoa.
Well, yeah, we were debating that on the page, and it's pretty tough to come to a consensus as to what is fair, what is right, what is good, what is wrong. But I think at some point in time, we're with all of the shifting that's going on, I think our definition of what it takes to become position eligible might have to change.
I haven't watched enough games, so is literally the second baseman going and holding somebody on at first? Is that how they're constituting a shift in play? I mean, or a shift in position? I mean, what does it look like?
Well, one box score I saw, I think it was last week or the week before, had him listed at first base, second base, first base, second base, first base. He changes gloves and on the shift he plays, because of the change of gloves and the position, he plays second base for a batter, and that then qualifies him. I don't think he's played second base.
He literally changes gloves. I did not know that. Holy cow.
Yes.
Why, Tim? Yes. Is he a better infielder than Baez? I mean, what are they doing?
Well, Joe Maddon's being cute, and he's attempting to play the numbers game on the shift, and they give him a small glove and have him charge the ball.
So
and move somebody in behind him at first base.
Wow, that's crazy. I know he's a lefty batter, and Sam, we should know this. I should know this, and I don't. I apologize. Maybe I'll edit this stuff out. Anthony Rizzo, does he throw right or left? So he throws left. So he throws left. So interesting. So he's a left-handed second baseman. So he's going to his glove side, which is going to be towards the first base side. To the second base. Wait a minute. So you got your glove on your right side. So he's, for him then, they must be playing for guys that are going to potentially hit the ball up the middle. Then he can go towards his glove side, which is going to be his natural way. That's actually an interesting perspective. I never really thought about that. That's actually very clever. I don't know if it's working, but it's at least makes some level of sense. Okay.
Well, it makes some level of sense, except for the fact that he's going to have second base eligibility next year. And in the context of our game, does it then make sense?
Well, it doesn't, but hey, he's on one of my teams, so it makes sense to me, Tim.
Oh, it's all about me. Okay.
That's right, yeah. I mean, I totally get it, but quite frankly, look, I'm not going to start second-guessing CBS, Yahoo, and ESPN. You know, if they set these things, and literally in the box score, it says first base, second base, first base, because I've seen those as well, Timmy, then you have to put them there.
But what happens, Rich, when the guy playing, when they have an extreme shift, and we've seen it numerous times this year, what happens when the third baseman, okay, goes from third base and plays shallow right field? Does he then gain outfield eligibility?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. And obviously not, because they're not doing that. It must be him changing gloves is why the official scorer believes he is switching positions. I did not know he was doing that, and I find that incredibly fascinating. I just haven't watched the games where he's doing that. Wow.
Yeah, my big concern is at some point in time with all this shifting and players moving around, we won't have any eligibility because everybody will be eligible for everything except pitcher and catcher, right?
Well, think about Brendan McKay, who was selected number 4 overall by the in the MLB draft last week by the Tampa Bay Rays. He's both a pitcher and a hitter and the best positional player, a best two-way player to come out of the game since John Olerud or some are saying Dave Winfield. What if he plays and it plays designated hitter first base, let's call it 2 or 3 games a week and pitches once a week? What if Ohtani comes over and gets signed by, let's call it an American League team like the Yankees and he designated hits a couple of days a week? I mean, what do we do then?
Well, I think with the rules in place right now, in those two sets of circumstances, you have to designate him as either 1, a pitcher, or 2, an offensive player, because one name cannot fill 2 spots. So you're gonna have to make a choice at the beginning of every week as to whether or not you want him pitching or on the offensive side of things. And that gets to be fun, doesn't it?
Yeah, and that is. And it's funny, I'm on the NFBC guys have me on a lot on their Sirius show, and I was on, I think it was last week, talking about the draft, and we brought up, you know, these guys that are two-way players, and I was laughing, saying, I can't wait to see you guys handle this. They go, oh, we've talked about it. We have a position on it. And I said, well, what is it? They go, we're not ready to tell you yet. I said, okay. So, but I would love to know how these guys are going to handle it, because why not? I mean, so Anthony Rizzo in many leagues is first base and second base eligible. I guess I can put him in any one of those slots, but I can't like switch them mid-game or something. I guess that does make sense. You have to designate them at the beginning of the week or the beginning of the day at least.
Well, either that or what you do when you have a two-way player is you count that player as 2 roster spots. And you use his name twice, once as a pitcher and once in your batting lineup. And he's 1 of your 14 and 1 of your 9. You count the player basically as a twin. And that way you can amass stats in both, but you'd lose a roster spot, Court.
Let's talk about the business of baseball. Let's, again, say one of these two-way players come. And let's say they're, you know, quality major league starter number 3 and a quality first baseman, let's say, you know, first division player, 15, 18 home runs a year, bats 275, a good player, not a great player, but good in both, twice the amount that you do a regular player. Or do you even pay him more because the value that a team gains by having a guy be able to play 2 positions is so valuable that you can literally have what equates to a 26th guy on your team at all times. You got an extra player. Is he worth 3 times the amount of a regular player?
If he's Ohtani, he's worth whatever they'll pay him, Rich. Everybody else, I don't know.
Look, I, All I care is, because this is the way I am, I just want to see somebody do it, because I want to see the game completely blown up because of it. I just think that, to me, is the most fascinating thing about this stuff.
But yeah, definitely, it's going to have people. If Ohtani comes over next year, one of the keys, I think, to signing this guy, obviously it's going to be money, but the biggest criteria, because he's going to get the money anyways, is going to be the team that says, okay, yes, we will allow you to pitch and hit. Okay, if he can get that out of the team, that's the favorite team, because that's what he wants. And at that point in time, you're right, it's going to turn our game upside down, and it's going to be a lot of fun to watch to see how it's sorted out.
I just wonder if it will ever happen, particularly with Ohtani. Now, maybe it's how you get to sign him. I don't know that. But can you imagine paying him $200 million a year and he's out there playing first base or designated hitter? And let's just say he starts to stink as a pitcher. Let's say first three starts is good and then he starts to not be very good. You know, like let's say the Yankees sign him. He'll get crucified by the media because it's like, well, if he wasn't out there getting tired during the middle of the week, he should be resting up the pitch. And you can just hear the firestorm this is going to be. And again, granted, I love that kind of stuff because it allows our show to be even more interesting, but you know, that's going to happen.
Well, yeah, but at the same point in time, if he's hit six home runs during a week and a half, all will be forgotten. The problem is when he slumps at both, then you got serious trouble.
So one more thing, and then Timmy, then take a quick break and then we'll finish up the show. We haven't done a whole lot, but we've covered a lot. This, I thought, was – I don't know where I saw this, but this one blew me away. This is like the true what the F. Kevin Youkilis, in his career, Timmy, had 292 3-0 counts. Omar Vizquel had 667 3-0 counts. They never took the bat off their shoulders.
Yeah, you know what amazes me is, where did you find these stats, Rich?
I saw this in a tweet somewhere – or something. I forgot where there was some other player that had just like had was always walking, and that's where they threw that up there. And then I went out to Elias and found that in fact that it was true, and it completely blew me away. I mean, that's just amazing that those guys 3-0. Why didn't they just? I mean, if you knew that, the pitcher should throw the ball right down the middle because they're not going to swing.
Well, yeah, there's a reason that Youkilis was called the Greek god of walks, right?
Yeah, they made a movie out of it, Tim, so we know that is a fact. When we get back, we're going to get a little bit of news and then talk about Tim's great waiver wire pickups. We are all over the place here, Timmy, but the first thing we've got to talk about is Derek Fisher. You and I have been talking about him for the last few weeks, and honestly, we didn't think he'd get called up. Thought there was maybe a chance that somebody got injured. Josh Reddick does get injured. He gets the call, and as they say, Timmy, so far so good.
Well, yeah, so far so good. He got that first home run out of the way real quick. I believe he's stolen a base. He's doing okay. He's holding his own.
Now, the big question is, I didn't take a look at the NFBC in terms of how much he costs. I actually own him in my NFBC team. But is he going to stay? Is he going to have the job?
The only thing that, unless he really tears it up in the next 3-4 days, I mean, really tears it up, or the Astros decide that Aoki is not the answer, and that's a possibility. It's got to be one of those two situations, or else I see a good possibility he ends back down on the farm for a while.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a little dicey. They did get Aoki because, I mean, they were terrible against lefties, so they got Aoki, who's a great platoon guy. He's on the good side of the platoon. Right? Or actually the bad side of the platoon, right? But it's some guy that, that I think at worst – Fisher becomes a platoon guy in left field with Aoki, but I don't think they're going to sit him against lefties.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how that one shakes down. I'm not totally convinced yet because there's a couple more games before we get to see Reddick activated. And I still think if he gets really hot in the next couple of days, Houston's going to have a hard time sending him down.
As a guy who had suffered from a herniated disc 7 years ago and had to have surgery on it, Timmy, I feel for anybody who has a herniated disc, and Adrian Gonzalez is trying to swing a weapon with a herniated disc, and there's lots of things you can do. Usually surgery is what's needed to fix it, but Cody Bellinger moves to first base. Cody Bellinger, let's face it, is a much more productive hitter at this juncture of his career than Adrian Gonzalez is. But taking a look, I mean, he's hit a ton of home runs, 18 home runs since April 25th when he was called up, but he's striking out a ton as well. My question to you is two questions: over under 35 home runs for the season, over under batting average.
Over on both, Rich. And, you know, we were talking about Aaron Judge earlier, okay? Judge is hitting a home run every 10.3 at bats this year. What's Cody Bellinger hitting?
I think it's every 8. I think I've heard this before.
Yeah, it's 9.99. So Bellinger is actually hitting more home runs per at bat than Aaron Judge. I think the 35 home runs is a lock. I think we're going to see periods of time where he goes 0 for 15, and I think the batting average will level out probably at about 240. But I think the 35 home runs is, I think that's a lock, unless he totally, totally collapses. And I don't think he will. That swing is too sweet. He's going to hit home runs.
Yeah, I think the swing is great. I mean, it's just he's being very, very aggressive at the plate. And, you know, it's all about everybody's got the angle, Timmy. It's, you know, and Eric Thames really started this, right? And it started a little bit last year, but now everybody's going like a windmill as opposed to trying to keep the swing level. And everybody's trying to yoke the ball. And strikeouts are way up, and home run, massive home run distance is way up as well. And more power. Batting average, on-base percentage is obviously by definition is coming down as well, but the game is changing, and boy, it's we've got to figure out like how to adjust to these changes.
Yeah, definitely. You know, we watched some ball yesterday, and, you know, Morales hit one, I think it was 465, and Broxton the other day hit one 460, and somebody in the Houston game parked one up by the train. Like, man, these guys are hitting the ball a mile.
Yeah, I mean, the Miguel Cabreras and Albert Pujols of the world who learned how to backspin the ball by, you know, kind of, you know, technique and always had that level swing. Now everybody's just, you know, uppercutting everything. And, you know, I remember doing that when I was in Little League, and they would tell you, don't do that, don't do the hit swing level. But, you know, everybody wanted to hit the ball a long way, and now it's become very popular in the major leagues. We'll see. How's Chris Davis, CHRIS, doing? Not so good.
KHRI is doing fine.
But the other Chris Davis in Baltimore, I think he's on the DL now, but tons of home runs, but
yeah,
the batting average isn't there. And it's just like, you just wonder if those guys, because they're so plentiful now, you know, 220 batting average guy can hit 30 home runs. All of a sudden, yeah, you can get them anywhere. And when it comes down to it's dollars and cents, Timmy. People will go to where they can make money. And if all of a sudden those guys are all over the place, I think the market will correct themselves, because they'll go, well, I'm looking for a guy who gets on base more, don't care so much about the power. And all of a sudden those guys' value will start to go up again. And I think you'll see a shift back to people trying to shorten up the swing a little bit.
Yeah, it works perfectly good for a guy like Joey Votto. But, you know, in Baltimore's case, Davis hits DL, and all they do is move Mancini, and he does the same thing, right?
That's right. And that's my point. So if I can get Mancini, Kendrys Morales, Chris Carter, these kind of guys, I mean, they're $3 or $4 million baseball players now. And I think what will quickly happen, and agents will figure this out as well, they'll go, wait a minute, you got to get on base more. Either learn some plate discipline or shorten up your swing. Otherwise, you're going to be a $3 or $4 million baseball player and not a $15 million baseball player, even though you can hit 30 home runs a season.
Well, yeah, you know, the prime examples for that this past off season, you know, you're looking at, you know, Kendrys Morales. I think he signed a deal for, what, $39 million or something over 3 years. Trumbo signed the same thing. Both of those guys could hit 40-plus home runs this year, but they're getting paid at a level that 5 years ago we would have said, man, that's a total bargain, isn't it?
besides Bellinger obviously getting more playing time at first base, and I think it's safe to say Adrian Gonzalez is going to be out for a while. Chris Taylor continues to get more playing time. He's hitting .302, 8 home runs, 7 stolen bases. He's got that crazy .391 batting average of balls in play. So obviously there's some regression likely, but he's a guy that if he's out on your waiver wire for some reason, he's a guy that should be rostered.
Well, yeah, and, you know, he's taken playing time against a guy that I thought would be hitting in the leadoff role and be a really good player this year, but so far the injury sidelined him and he just hasn't got going. Forsythe, you know, he's got 2 home runs, 8 RBIs, and a .200 batting average. I think Taylor's gonna start stealing more and more time away from Logan Forsythe.
Yeah, it's a shame. Guys sometimes get injured, Timmy, and they just struggle to return, whether they just, you know, somebody else takes their job or they're just not completely healed. It happens all the time. Speaking of big boys, Timmy, and that's used to be former big boy, Matt Adams. Remember him? He gets traded to Atlanta. Atlanta is looking for a replacement. Freddie Freeman having, an all-star year, maybe a MVP type of season, goes out, lost for 10 to 12 weeks. And quite frankly, Matt Adams is pretty much doing the same thing Freddie Freeman was doing.
Yeah, just amazing. He's putting an 11-20 ops, 66 at bats in June. He's got 7 home runs, 19 RBIs. Pretty amazing turnaround for Adams. And yeah, I think the change of scenery is huge for Matt Adams. And I'm happy to see him doing what he's doing. Unfortunately, that creates a problem towards the end of July when Freddie Freeman returns, doesn't it?
Yeah, because Freddie Freeman's getting paid and did nothing wrong. But Matt Adams played a little left field, and he's a svelte Matt Adams. He didn't play very well. I actually saw a couple games from out there. It was not pretty. It was who was the guy that Marcus hated his guts? He played left field. Used to play for the Nationals. Had a brother that played. Was always in trouble. Young, yes. Remember, he was like the worst outfielder ever. I mean, Matt Adams is close to him. So,
well, yeah, I would say that, yeah, Matt Holliday is another outfielder that sort of lost it the past couple of years as well from a fielding perspective. But, you know, the worst that's going to happen out of this whole situation, and I think it's a great opportunity for Atlanta, is, you know, Freeman's coming back at the end of July. What else happens towards the end of July? Trade deadline. And there are some teams out there that could possibly use and be willing to trade for a player like Matt Adams. You know, the team that comes to mind for me as a playoff contender is the Dodgers. You know, hey, they can take Bellinger, move him to the outfield. You know, Gonzalez, I don't think is going to be back with any authority this year, but a player like Matt Adams to the Dodgers, Bellinger into the outfield, that could be a real, real interesting play, I think.
That's an interesting perspective to me. I like your thinking there, even though we talked about Chris Young and Chris Taylor, you know, by then everything's correct. That's actually a really good call. But again, most teams are going to be looking for pitching, and it'll be interesting to see how many bats actually get moved at the trading deadline. And we can go to the Detroit Tigers. I mean, they're probably going to be falling out of it pretty soon, and they got a bunch of old guys. Would Miguel Cabrera ever get moved? JD Martinez is the guy likely to get moved because he's in his walk year. So it's going to be very interesting.
Well, yeah, you know what? Even a team like the Royals, Hosmer's not around forever. You know, a guy under control like Adams to, say, Kansas City as part of a package. You know, there's some interesting options. And definitely the Braves are going to be doing well, I think, by picking up Matt Adams.
Yeah. Timmy, Sean Doolittle has 2 saves in a row. Should I read anything into that at all?
Yeah, Casilla got hit on his non-throwing shoulder in the dugout Saturday by a batted ball. So it doesn't look like there's a DL stint involved, but they rested him for a couple of days. Doolittle, I think I recommended him on the wire 2-3 weeks ago.
I read it and listened, Timmy, because one of us listens to the other and the other doesn't. So just to go on record.
Oh, I prefer to go on CDs, but whatever works for you, Rich.
Okay. Well played.
Hey, I'm a techno sort of guru.
Oh,
right?
Absolutely.
I moved on with my life.
As the great Dr. Mershak, we'll have to have him on the air again, and he will attest to the fact of your technical prowess, Demi. So,
the lost
podcast. So,
I had to get Alan to post the waiver wire on the face page because I don't know how to copy and paste on my phone. Okay, and I didn't bring my laptop with me when I was in Atacocan on the weekend. So,
that's actually pretty hard. So, Timmy, I'm going to give you a pass on that. I'm going to give you a pass on that one.
Oh, okay. Okay, hey, I thought I was just being a dumbass. But
one of my favorite players, and I fell in love with this guy, maybe 4 years ago. I saw him in the backfields in spring training. It was Franchy Cordero. Put him on all my team. I just loved his swing at that sweet lefty swing, really nice kind of staying inside the ball. And then, Timmy, he was brutal, absolutely brutal. He got called up this year, and I think we probably mentioned his name, and I just like, it's Franchy Cordero. He strikes out a ton, never walks.
Yep.
Dude's hitting 300. He's got 3 home runs and a stolen base. It's only been 20 games. I get it, striking out 36% of the time, but should people be investing in Franchy Cordero?
Well, you know, one or two people is going to have, I think, a full-time job when it's all said and done. It's either going to be Perella or it's going to be Franchy Cordero, because Manny Margot is going back to center field. That's a done deal. I think he's going out on a rehab starting today. So one of those two players, I think, is going to own the bulk of the at-bats. And in the next 4 or 5 days or so, whoever the hot hand is going to win that race. And odds are 50-50. It could be Cordero.
Yeah, I mean, the other gentleman just really surprised me, but Franchy Cordero surprised me as well. So it's fascinating. I think you're right. Whoever has the hot hand will get the job. I'm pulling for Franchy because love the name, and I think that swing is really sweet.
Yeah, I'm forced to go the other direction because Barella qualifies at second base. He's my middle infielder in about 5 leagues right now.
Okay. Okay, well, then there you go. It's all about Tim, and it's all about me. So people listen to you the first time, and you're going to go out to iTunes and write about it. All these guys just talk about what's good for them. Yeah.
He's instrumental in me moving from 12th to 10th in a couple of leagues, Rich. I'm all in on him.
Tim, I'm going to give you a Twitter question from N. Quasbarth. I have no idea. I'm probably saying his name completely wrong. First of all, love the podcast, Tim. Anybody who tweets me and says love the podcast, they have a chance to get their question read. It's my first choice.
I was just going to say, if you say the podcast sucks and then you ask a question, odds are good it's not going to get there. Right?
Exactly. It says, love the podcast. It's my first choice for fantasy baseball, so I get to read his question. Would you drop Rourke and pick up Faria in a 10-team roto league? So Tyler Rourke just got annihilated. Tanner Rourke just got annihilated tonight. No, it's probably too strong a word. He got beat up pretty badly by the Miami Marlins. And Faria's just been amazing. Is he that good that you're dropping Tanner Rourke for?
I was never really big on Tanner Rourke, to be honest with you. You know, he had the one big season, but there's a fair number of years where he was Tanner Rourke. So, hey, everything I've seen with Faria so far, I like. He played the White Sox, the Jays, the Tigers, pitched well. He's only allowed 4 walks in the 3 games. And you look at his minor league numbers, and everything he's doing at the big league level thus far is supported by what he did in the minors. So, yeah, I would make that move. I would take the chance because I'm not a real big Tanner Rourke fan.
You know, Timmy, I knew not to play Dylan Bundy because I saw the correction coming, but I still put him out there, and he just got blown up.
Yeah.
6 earned runs in 4 1/3 innings. So why don't I listen to myself?
Right about now, I don't think I'd be starting any Baltimore Orioles pitcher other than Brock.
Yeah. the Orioles are in big trouble, Timmy. It's just, we kept thinking for the last 2 or 3 years, they have no pitching. This year, they truly have no pitching.
Yeah, there was a span of about four or five games last week where anything under eight earned runs was considered a success. That's not good.
Timmy, let's do your waiver wire very quickly. We're over time here a little bit, and it's 9:15, and I got to take out the dog. So, Timmy, Beans injured himself over the weekend.
Uh-oh, that's not good. Hopefully it's nothing serious.
Well, so it was actually Friday. So his morning routine is Lori gets up, lets him out of his little cage. He immediately runs into bed. He hops up on a chair and then hops up on the bed. So just to hang out with me for a while. And then he fell off the bed. And he did one of those squeals. And then he held his leg up for the next couple of hours when he was walking around on three legs. It was like, uh-oh. So called in and said, look, I got to bring the dog in. So Lori and I took the dog out to the vet, expecting he's got a broken leg or broken toe or something. Yeah. And she felt around and said, we can do x-rays, but I don't think it's broken. I think it'll be okay in a couple of days. And sure enough, Timmy, just a sprain, but $200 later, that's what I was told. So it cost me $220 or something like that to say that the dog's okay.
Well, at least you didn't have to rename him Tripod, Rich.
That's true. It was so pathetic when dogs were running around on three legs. It's so pathetic.
And the reason I know that is because somebody in my family had a dog that only had three legs, and that's what they called the dog.
Wow, Tripod. I mean, that seems politically incorrect. I'm just going to go on record as saying that.
Dog lived a full life. He was really happy. He didn't know he had three
legs. I know. It just doesn't feel right to me, Timmy. I'm sorry.
Maybe it's a Canadian thing.
Okay, let's go to your waiver wire. We've talked about a lot of these guys. Eddie Rosario, Timmy, just shot out of the cannon last week. I dropped him the week before last, just so everybody knows, full disclosure there. You say it's worth a cheap bid to see if he can sustain the hot streak. Can he sustain the hot streak?
Like I said, it's worth spending a buck to see what happens this week. He's Eddie Rosario. He had a good week, but why not? You know, hey, if you got a hole to fill short term, you're gonna pick him up for next to nothing. Hey, take the chance.
This next guy is very interesting, Timmy. Kind of a failed prospect in Brian Goodwin, coming up to the Washington's organization. He was a top prospect, at least for me. I think he made the top 100 once, and then he could never get out of Double A. He could not get out of Double A. He just nothing was working for him. Finally got the Triple A. Nothing was working for him. He comes up to the major leagues and looks like a player.
Well, yeah, I remember seeing him in the AFL, and I really liked what I saw. The kid could run. I saw him mash a couple home runs, drove the ball really well, and then he just got stuck behind somebody for years and didn't play up to, I don't think, his potential. But, you know, hey, right now he's hot. He's playing well. So if you're, at 2% ownership level, a cheap bid should secure his services just to see what happens over the next week or two.
Another top prospect that kind of snuck up was Matt Chapman with the Oakland Athletics. He came up because of an injury, but I'm assuming he's going to stay because this is, you know, one of the better prospects in the Oakland Athletics organization. He's very similar to a lot of the guys we're talking about, tremendous power, tons of strikeouts. I mean, he fits right into the modern baseball game.
Well, yeah, and right away the A's DFA'd Trevor Plouffe, shipped him off to the Rays, and hey, it's his job, and he's going to be there for the duration. A lot of power potential, I think, but again, what, 220, 230 batting average maybe?
Yeah, I think that's right. It's almost, there's so many guys like Matt Chapman out there that, you know, again, even in fantasy circles, some of these guys in 12-team leagues are going to be out there. You just have to pick and choose maybe who's hot, Tim, is who you want to roster because they're all very similar players.
Yeah, I agree. And by going with the hot hand, hopefully you can, you know, run while they're hot and then move on because it seems like, you know, you start looking at players like Rosario and Davidson and Goodwin. There's no shortage of options to play the hot hand game.
Another failed prospect down the list is Alan Hansen. Long time with the Pittsburgh Pirates. They finally just had enough of him, cut him, and he winds up with the White Sox. Timmy, and another guy that's I've always loved this guy. I still have him with Dynasty Leagues. One of the guys I have not dropped out of frustration, and he looks hot.
Well, yeah, and you know what, Rich? As much as I love Charlie Tilson, okay, who is the center fielder of the future, I am actually hoping for failure there so that Alan Hansen can rub it in the Pirates' face. How's that?
Yeah, that's I just think Alan Hansen, I think he's going to have very, very fantasy-friendly skills. A little bit of pop, a little bit of speed, an okay hitter, a guy that can hit at the top of a lineup. If he gets a chance, I think there's goodness in there.
Yeah, I think so, especially for our game. I definitely think so. And right now, Tilson's not going to be back until sometime mid-July, it looks like. So he's got a nice head start, and the White Sox aren't afraid to put him at the top of the order. So, you know, if he proves his mettle, he could have a job for the balance of the year and longer.
Three veteran pitchers, Tim. You get, I want you to order them 1, 2, and 3, who you would prefer on your team. Iwakuma, Jason Hamill, or Homer Bailey. Who do you think going to have the better upside here in the second half? They're all three on your waiver wire.
Homer Bailey.
Wow. Tim's all in on Homer Bailey. I have him on two leagues, Timmy. I'm hoping you're right because, you know, people could have picked him up. In fact, I saw him picked up on a couple of waiver wire claims, which I forgot to take a look. I agree with you. I think there's a lot to like there.
Well, so far the rehab is going very, very well. And there's going to be the opportunity. Hey, let's face it, since his rotation is a mess, I think Bailey is going to slide right in. And based on what we've seen in the rehab so far, I really like what I'm seeing. I picked him up in tote, and I have to have him in my active lineup this week. But I picked him up cheap there in the hopes that I'm going to get three solid months out of him down the stretch.
Timmy, introduce Phil Mattin to our listeners because he's somebody that's the last guy on your list that looks like an interesting name.
Well, yeah, you look at what he did at El Paso this year, and he was their closer, 13 saves, decent ERA and whip, and Brandon Maurer did as he does occasionally, blew the save, and Mattin came in and close the door. The reason I find him so intriguing is I really think, you know, the discussions have already been fairly public about Hand moving on and selling Hand. I could see the possibility of Maurer being in the same situation where they could try and sell both of those guys. And if so, I'd have to think that Mattin would be the number one contender for the job. So if you're looking at speculating on cheap saves, I think it's a good choice.
Great call, Timmy. I mean, absolutely brilliant call. And I'm glad we ended with that because it, you know, guys, look, I know we talk about this every week. We get the waiver wires up. We try to Sunday midday, Sunday morning. In fact, we got it up Sunday morning this week. You got to read this stuff because a lot of the names you already know, some of them you're not going to know, and Tim is really good at this part of the game. So I think it's a great call, Timmy, and I applaud you for that, and I encourage our listeners to go out and read the stuff because, you know, I think they're worth the pickups.
Yeah, I try to go a little bit deeper. It's one of the reasons that I started doing this many years ago is because I found that there wasn't the depth that I wanted to see. And I was listing all these players, so it only made sense for me to start writing about them. But, you know, even a guy like Chance Adams, like I don't know what your thoughts are on Adams, how many times you've seen him. But with CeCe out now, did the Yankees make a move and bring up Chance Adams sometime in the next 2 to 3 weeks? I included him because I thought the opportunity could be there based on what we've seen. What are your thoughts on Adams?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen Chance Adams pitch a lot just because he was in Trenton, it seemed like forever. And I know
right.
The Yankees are high on him. I know a lot of people in the industry are high on him. The writers in the industry are high on him. Maybe I've seen him pitch three times. He's just been okay for me, Tim. I mean, he's got good stuff, not great stuff. But, I mean, Jordan Montgomery's been pretty good. So you know, the Yankees guys have flourished a little bit. Adams is a right-hander. Usually they don't do all that well in the Yankee Stadium. He does not have number one, number two starter stuff. He's probably at best a number three, probably will settle into a number four. But Tim, if you need pitching, which everybody does, it's not a bad call.
Well, yeah, so much depends on opportunity. And, you know, the reason I listed him is exactly that reason, the chance that Adams gets that opportunity.
Yeah, and he's good. I mean, Tim, he's going to be a fine pitcher. He's going to be probably have a fairly long and successful major league career. But to me, he's good, not great. So I've never really rostered him anywhere. But I think it's a good call because you get six good starts out of him, and that's all you need. So
that would make him my ace in a couple leagues.
I know. Timmy, great show. Guys, I hope you enjoyed it. We've been going about an hour and a half. Timmy, anything you want to plug for the listeners?
No, absolutely nothing, other than the fact that I hope everybody had a nice Father's Day. You were spoiled absolutely rotten, and to wish everybody good luck this week, and we'll catch you again next Monday.
And Timmy, I'm out in Visalia, California tomorrow at the California League All-Star Game, where it's reportedly 110 degrees as we speak. So going to be, as they say, a little warm. I'll be in there with my my shorts on and T-shirts, so trying to stay cool.
Yeah, I wouldn't get out of the car at 110, Rich. I wouldn't even make a budge. I'd start to melt at 75. At 110, I'd be a puddle inside of 5 minutes.
Yeah, I've been out in Arizona Fall League when it's 105, 110 degrees. It's miserable out there. I'm hoping that it's not going to be that hot, but there's no humidity in Arizona, so I'm assuming there's not a whole lot of humidity there. It's liable to be pretty miserable. So hopefully I'll be able to stay the whole game, Timmy, but if I get hot, I'm leaving. So
yeah, make sure you got a six-pack of water with you. You might need it, Rich.
Absolutely. Timmy, we'll see you next Monday. You good for next Monday?
Next Monday, done like dinner, Rich. Be well, safe travels, and hopefully we'll get a full report from that All-Star game you're attending.
You surely will, Timmy. Be well.